Hello and welcome to Blogosphere Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley and I'm the founder of Blogosphere. We run events, an influencer network, a magazine, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, be sure to tweet us your suggestions. Our Twitter handle is @blogosphereM. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Melanie Kentish, who is Group Director of Influencer at Sky and is responsible for overseeing entertainment, cinema, kids, sport, VIP and products. Mel is a veteran in the space with over 15 years experience working in the field and has consulted for many brands such as Samsung, Sony, Nails Inc., Kellogg's, Gap, Rolls-Royce and Boots. Most recently, she's been most well known for the launch of Sky Glass.
I am Melanie Kentish and I'm Group Director of Influencers at Sky.
And please could we have a bit of information about your background, so your career. Where did you, what was your first job and how have you found yourself in the world of influencer?
Oh my god, so it's a happy accident. I started off in banking. That wasn't my proudest time in the whole world. So I was a financial advisor and deeply unhappy, and ended up just in a serious state of depression, really unhappy with work, ended up just thinking, I can't do this. And I had done some event management for road shows that we've kind of done in the bank. And I ended up working for a web company in 2005, doing events called the Future of Web Apps. And so we travelled all over the world, San Francisco, New York, Miami, London, laying on conferences about where we thought the web was going to be going. And it was very much moving from static web pages where everyone just consumed information through to applications like Twitter, and Facebook was about to launch, I think, around then. And getting the founders of those companies to talk about where they thought the vision of web was going. And I just discovered this huge love that I had for technology, very much an early adopter, loved working in a startup, loved the fast pace. I'm a little bit relentless and a glutton for punishment. And so that really took off. And I remember at the time, blogs were just starting to appear. And when I went for the interview, they said, do you know how to blog? And I absolutely, yes, absolutely I can. And then I went home and Googled, like, what's a blog? How do I set one up? And thought, right, I need to teach myself about this really quite quickly. And because I was trying to stay ahead of what the trends were, who the hottest startups were, which tech companies we thought were going to be really big, it meant that I really leaned into trying lots of platforms, testing everything, having a presence everywhere. And I really loved that.
Yeah. So how long were you at the bank for then prior to this?
Oh my goodness. Oh, it's PTSD. I've tried to remove it from my memory. Probably around 4 years. So I ended up actually shifting from being a financial advisor to moving over to a marketing function within the bank, which was fractionally better, but still it was banking and not for me. And I always thought, right, I'm really not corporate, which is ironic given that I now work for Sky, which is part of the Comcast family. But I think it's about finding the right fit for you in finance. For me, wasn't that.
Mm. But do you find that background helps you day to day now, just through that lens, yeah, in terms of pitching for budgets and things?
Absolutely. And I think it's understanding your stakeholders, understanding the language that they speak and being able to relate what you're doing, and using language that they understand, comparing it so that they can start to see apples and apples. They're comparing like for like. And so that was definitely very helpful. And in what I do today, because I'm less involved in the day to day, my team do a lot of it. Then it's being able to do all of the forecasting, it's being able to pull together business plans, a lot of the less fun things, but it enables us to grow and to do more great work. So it's definitely, it laid that foundation for sure.
So just going back then, you'd come back from the job interview, Googled what a blog is, and then got, yeah, ahead on all the different platforms. Which was your favourite platform personally at that time, and why?
I was deep on MySpace at the time, customizing the way it looked. I look back, I'm like, what was I doing? And then I remember being in a lift at South by Southwest, and Dave Moran was in the lift and was like, I'm working for a company called Facebook, and I'm going to invite you to a party. So sign up to Facebook and I'll write on your wall later. And I remember thinking, oh, it must be like MySpace. It must be like graffiti. So he's going to like write on my wall. It's really quite funny when you look back. So then I started using Facebook, but primarily my platform became YouTube.
And is that so 2005, six?
Yeah, so that was around 2006. Then I became quite heavily involved in YouTube. I just found it amazing that all of a sudden there was this wealth of information that you could consume. I'm obsessed with learning. Like, I drive to work, I'm listening to podcasts, I'm constantly thinking about what the next thing can be. And I just loved the fact that all of a sudden you had access to hear all of these people teaching you all of this amazing stuff without the need to be in the same room as them, which I found really compelling. And then in the office, we had a 4-day work week. So the founder was very much inspired by Tim Ferriss. So we worked longer days, but 4 days a week. And it always meant that on a Thursday, I was in a very good mood, very excitable, and was still wanting to learn more about YouTube. And so I started my own YouTube channel. I look back, it was very cringeworthy.
I think
And it
that's
was
always the way, isn't
just,
it? Look, when you look back at
yeah,
those
oh my
things.
God, it was awful. Like, honestly, if I could delete it, yeah. But it was just, it was about me. I was just playing around with it. And I grew up in Bristol. I hated my accent. None of my videos were spoken. So they were all me holding pieces of paper up to camera. And it was about my awful dating life. It was about being a bit of a geek. It was about gaming. And they kind of took off. And so all of a sudden, then I was getting like 30,000 views per video, which
Wow.
now isn't much, but at the time
Yeah.
it was okay. And I remember being approached by Kurt Geiger like way back then, because I also had a shoe blog, and so I was like, wow, I think this is going to be a thing. And so I had quite early foresight
That's
that,
so interesting that it wasn't looking at somebody else, it was actually through your own stuff that that's
yeah,
how you realized that, where the industry was going.
massively.
And so the company that you were working for, can you remind me, sorry, of the
Yeah, it was a company called Carsonified at the time, and it was owned by a guy called Ryan Carson.
And so how long did you leave that job to go full time with creating, or what happened next?
I worked there for a number of years. It was probably one of the best jobs I had. Like, I loved it. I loved the people in the industry. I loved looking at future trends. I loved doing events. I like meeting people face to face. And then I kind of went from organizing the events to looking after senior stakeholders. So all of a sudden it became really important that we were still regularly in touch with industry leaders and thought leadership pieces. So my job became more focused around that. But it got to the point that I'd kind of developed as far as I could. And I was very entrepreneurial. I'd seen all these people around me and wanted to do more than just working for someone else. In the meanwhile, one of the sponsors of the events was a tech platform that enabled dating companies. Very random part of my life. And so I moved to Windsor to head up their B2B marketing. And so I looked after all of their social media at the time. I was doing everything from e-commerce through to like newsletters to internal comms. So it broadened my marketing awareness, and I really enjoyed it. But again, it was very limited, and B2B was definitely not my passion. My passion was direct consumer. And then I got approached by the Engine Group in London for a company called Jam at the time, and they were a social media agency. And they were starting to see that bloggers were a thing, and they were very much running these social campaigns, and they wanted to figure out how they could get bloggers to tack onto that to do free advertising off the bat, but they were doing it in a very ad hoc way, and it was very much a we need someone to talk about something, as opposed to looking at it from a creator lens and going, why would they want to be talking about these brands? So I went in as a consultant effectively and ended up running a division there looking after influencer marketing.
And what year was that?
That would have been around 2013.
Right. And all the while you're still creating content on your own platforms.
Yeah.
And coming in as a consultant and looking at it through a creator lens, obviously being a creator yourself, what did you hit much, many barriers in trying to explain, you know, what were the main problems at that time explaining creators to people, did you find?
With a lot of the brands that we were talking to, I mean, none of the brands that we were working with back then paid people at all. And so there were lots of events, there was lots of gifting, there were lots of experiences. So randomly, Sky was one of my customers back then. I remember promoting Boardwalk Empire, and we did an immersive Prohibition event where we had all these people come down to this amazing 20s bar, this event that we'd laid on, which was incredible. But they really didn't understand the need to invest. And there was a lot of a mindset, like, why would these kids in bedrooms, which is what they were thinking about YouTubers, like, why would these people have power? And actually, so much of it was just done through press or through our own channel. Like, there was a lot of resistance about, will they represent our brand in the right way? And how can we control that to be our brand on other people's channels? And so it was education about, actually, it's educating them, taking them on the journey, understanding that these people don't need to have the same tone of voice as the brand. That's the beauty of it. And I was quite lucky in the way we did quite a lot of me going into boardrooms, talking to brands, going, I'm a creator, let me show you what sits on my channel. So I remember pitching for Boots, and I'd gone out and bought a load of makeup and created a Get Ready With Me video, which I then put on YouTube. And when you had it there that you could then demonstrate how it would look, it kind of got their buy-in a little bit more. It wasn't so abstract. They could understand how their brand would come to life.
When people and the brands sort of didn't understand how much power they had, and obviously in today's market, people really do. Do you think, ironically, that creators did have more power back then because there were fewer of them? Or what do you think in how influential a creator is?
I think, look, when you look at some of the original creators, so people like Victoria McGrath, Louise Pentland, Jim Chapman, some of the real originals who were there and some of the first amongst the scene, they continue to have some of the most influence that we see today, because they don't just get a following overnight. They've earned the trust of those communities. And when they make a recommendation, the communities really buy into that. And I think you see a few instances of that now, like Mrs. Hinch, like her, it's ferocious.
Yeah.
Love, like it's Marmite, love or hate. But she definitely has this army of fans that will defend her to the hilt. And I think we've lost some of that now. I think people are much more trendy. And I think you're seeing that more with TikTok. What's fashionable today won't be fashionable next year. And so the creators are constantly having to revolutionize their presence on these platforms. So I do think they were much more powerful back then in smaller numbers. However, I think now you are seeing greater mass adoption of different social platforms. So at the time, you never would have had my mum on social media, whereas now I would have my mum. We're looking at how do we tap into the over 55 space, and there are creators, so that whoever you are, there is a community for you somewhere. And actually, for us at Sky, we've just started Sky Up, and it's about making the digital space and all of the information and services are available to every community. So it's not just if you're a millennial and you're a streamer.
Yeah.
It's really important for people who are 70, 80, who want to get their shopping delivered to them, who want to be able to search for things on the internet. It's really important they have access to the web and the knowledge to be able to find what they're looking for there.
I have actually had a lot of conversations recently with people that you wouldn't consider the main demographic of TikTok, who are going to TikTok for financial advice. And, you know, they've got their little, and the algorithm has just learned it so well that, you know, top tips to do your tax return and things like this.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. So you, just going back again, you've pitched to Boots using your own example. Who were the first sort of brands that decided that, yes, this isn't just a gifting or PR vehicle, this is actually marketing, and started to invest? And what years was that, and how have the budgets changed?
I think around 2014, 2015, we had quite a lot of technology clients at the time, so Microsoft, Samsung, Sony for cameras. So I think we were quite lucky because they were used to early adopters and they were used to playing into that space and taking risks, and they needed to. So when I look at what we did for Samsung, we had our first ambassador group. So we would lay on workshops about how to get the most out of their technology. We would have platforms come in so that they would learn how to use the platforms to their best advantage. And that then really set a precedence and allowed us to get the data. And I think this, for me now, there is a lot that we could do in the earn space, particularly working in the entertainment space, right? Everybody would love to come to a premiere and they'll post it on social media, but actually, is that doing the job that you need? Is it getting the messaging that you need there? And are you getting the data to prove that it works? Mm-hmm. And so then when we started to convey to brands, look, you invest, you give creative freedom to the creators because they know best what works for their community, but you get editorial control. So you will get to see what is being said, the way that it's being said, the fact that it's factually correct. You can help influence some of the messaging there. And then you will get all of this data that helps you optimize your performance moving forwards is really critical.
Mm.
And that then started to unlock more budget coming our way because it gave brands confidence to be able to forecast, to be able to set KPIs. And I think we still live in a world where so many brands think that influencer marketing is finger in the air and a little bit of a leap of faith. Absolutely not. It's one of the most measurable channels that you can get. And so that's been really critical for us in terms of growth in that field.
Do you think there is a balance, though, where some people think of influence marketing as just performance marketing, and it's not just, you know, buying an ad on Facebook.
No, absolutely. And I think when I came into Sky 4 years ago, the first thing that I wanted to do was to set up an ambassador program. And it's why we do all of our influence marketing in-house. We don't use any agencies, because for me, it's critical that we get creators and their audiences to fall in love with the brand. And I think that is incredibly hard to do through an agency, where the agency benefits from that currency, that goodwill that you build over time. And so we don't do transactional campaigns. We sign our ambassadors for a minimum of a year-long contract, with the commitment that it's a relationship, and we commit to them the same as we want them to commit to us. And,
yeah.
And as part of that relationship, we don't want them going off going, Amazon Prime TV is the best thing ever, because it looks fickle to their audiences. It takes away from what we're doing. And also, we want to be very soft in our approach. We don't want to convey every single message that we need to in one campaign. It's softly, softly. It's about building the trust of the their communities and their audiences, so that you can build that brand love, tap into things that aren't just trading messages. Like, I never would have come into Sky and would have promoted a tech product like Sky Q or like Sky Glass without having years of doing campaigns around entertainment and things that people love talking about. Everyone loves talking about what they're watching on telly.
Yeah.
And so it was really crucial for me that you build that up so that you can, when you cash in your chips and you have a big tech launch, for example, it's not just transactional, that you've kind of taken that community on the journey with you.
It just shows the importance of, well, you know, a minimum of a year long, that you actually do have that relationship and it is authentic. And that we do see, I mean, there has been a move to the longer sort of tail campaigns. Mm. When you came into Sky then, what exactly were you coming in to do? What was sort of...
So for a long while in between, I had my own agency, and we did influencer marketing for Kellogg's Global. We did it for everybody. We did it for Nails Inc., for One Piece, like for Samsung, for Sony, every brand you can imagine. I really, really loved that.
Yeah.
But then I left and I had children, and it was, I made the error of hiring quite junior staff, and it was amazing because I very much believe in apprenticeship and giving people the opportunity and training them up. But it meant that it left me in a position that I was always needing to be in every pitch. When there were senior stakeholders, they wanted me in every meeting, and I just couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I shut the agency, decided to become a consultant, and at that point did consultancy for a number of brands, Sky being one of them. And then they took me in for a 3-month contract when I was pregnant with my second daughter, 6 months pregnant, and they tried to extend my contract. And I was like, I'm 9 months pregnant. I don't think, however much I try and close my legs, this is going to work. And so left to have my daughter, but literally started doing consultancy work again when she was 3 months old. So I would put, like, every nap time I was working. I love it. It's my identity. I am not a stay-at-home mum. I feel guilt about the fact that I am not the one baking cake, showing up in the playground all the time. But ultimately, they see me thriving in work, and it shows them that anything is possible and they can do everything.
Yes.
So came back doing consultancy, was working every night as soon as I put them to bed. And then as soon as my youngest daughter turned 6 months, I came in full time, worked as a contractor for 6 months, and then became permanent. And I loved the pace of Sky. Like, it's so fast. We launch in a week what most people launch in a year.
Mm. You've got to get that entrepreneurial itch as well, where you want to move
Absolutely.
Fast.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, if you cut me open, I bleed Sky. It's a little bit sad, like I've swallowed the Kool-Aid. But we, like, this year we'll launch 30 entertainment campaigns. There will be another 10 TV launches. There is mobile, there is broadband, there is all of the brand stuff that we do.
What was the first influencer campaign that you worked on when you got to Sky?
Well, the first decent campaign I got was for Riviera. And anyone who knows me, it was completely up my street. So it was, again, when I came into Sky, they did no paid campaigns. It's a traditional media company,
yeah,
one of the biggest media buyers, and we have Sky Media. So absolutely looking at influencers was not something they were going to be doing. But at the time, we had paused spend on some of our social media platforms. We were kind of doing a review of what we were doing there. And we had Riviera launching, and so all of a sudden we had this budget, and everyone went, okay, well, what can we do here? And I put my hand up waving ferociously going, give me a little bit of money and I can do something. And I remember it was a decent budget. I think I got like £70,000 for that campaign. And so it was a substantial campaign, working with big names, but lots of numbers as well. For me, it's never been about working with a handful of influencers.
Yeah.
It's about getting FOMO. You want enough people to be talking about it, and over a sustained period of time. So I worked with Victoria. I worked with people like Lorna.
Well, she was an extra, wasn't she? I was
yeah. Yeah, she came. That was actually the season after. Mm. She was such a fan of the show that I brought her in as an extra, and we had an amazing time in Saint-Tropez. But I remember just going in Sky and just going, right, so what we're going to do is we're going to have this really glamorous event, and it's going to be really high-end luxury. It was basically, what would I really love, and how can I target people? And it was great fun, and it did so well. It did so, so well. And so that was the first time that I had all of this data that I could then go to Sky going, wait there.
Did it over deliver?
Massively. Like the engagement levels were through the roof. And when you looked at the quality of engagement, it wasn't just lots of likes and flames going, oh, you look really hot, which does nothing for the brand. It was talking about, I can't wait to watch this. I watched it too, engaging in conversation around the storylines. It did really well. So, by far, I still look at that through rose-tinted glasses. It was amazing.
When you are sort of pitching to for budget and to run a campaign, what are the KPIs? You know, that was a sort of brand sentiment piece, but engagement rates, you know, is it kind of, I suppose, with Sky Glass, click-throughs? I mean, we do need to talk about the Sky Glass campaign. So you start with Riviera, and then how did the Sky Glass absolute behemoth campaign, which I think is the biggest influence marketing campaign that I've ever seen, or it hit everywhere.
I'm 18. It's just aged me a couple of decades. it's been really quite a journey. Like when you consider I came in Sky, there was zero budget. We are now at multi-million pound budgets each year. A team that is growing weekly. And so the KPIs have changed, and we've become a lot more established in the KPIs that we're looking at. So it was... It started off looking at like follower count and reach. And actually it was about awareness, and let's just make people aware that these shows are out there. And we were very much using platforms at the time to make sure that we were hitting the right demographic for the shows. And that was very different than the space that I'd come into, because when I came in, the social team were going, we want to target a 40-year-old male. So let's work with a 40-year-old male creator, whereas actually quite often they're following women or vice versa. And so being audience first was really critical. And then when we were looking at KPIs, I was looking at vanity metrics. So it was looking at reach, it was looking at likes, it was looking at comments. We look at today and where that's moved to, and absolutely there's still a role to play in that, particularly if it's new IP. So it's an unheard or unknown show, or an HBO show coming over from the States and we need attribution to Sky. Very much it's about awareness. But for us now, it's about comments. It's about the sentiment of those comments. It's about the quality of those comments. So if there's 100 comments, how many of those comments are actually about Sky or the show? And that has now tailored when we go live with our activity. So if it's around a show, it's often not in the lead up to TX, but it's after the show has launched, because then you can have conversation with your community about the content. There's no conversation if they can't watch the show yet, right? It's just someone telling you it's great. You can't engage with that. And then now we go right through to econometrics. So looking at shifting intent to purchase, looking at shifting brand perceptions. When you look at things like Sky Glass, it was registrations on the website, it was traffic being sent, it was swipe ups. It's looking at things like shares, because actually there's something really magical in a piece of content being shared, not by a creator, but someone looking at it and going, that's really great, and I endorse that, and I'm going to share that with my community. That's like the magic. And so it's been a real evolution of the KPIs.
In terms of
that we look at
measurement tools, are they all Sky in-house tools, or do you use third-party sort of influencer marketing tracking software?
So we use Werisma as a platform in terms of pulling in some of the data there. I will not lie, so much of it is done manually in-house by my team. Literally with stories, it's screen grabs and it's looking at that stuff, because you'll be aware many of the creators don't want to authorize third-party apps to have access to their stories. So a lot of it is manual, and then
that's
all
very
that
interesting
gets...
because you have so many people saying, you know, we have the software that will fix everything, and actually at a company as huge as Sky, the trust is still doing things with people. It is a human-led industry, isn't it?
Absolutely. It comes down to relationships. We could not do our jobs if it wasn't for relationships. So every campaign we do, we have a face-to-face or a Teams briefing with the creator to talk through the brief so that collaboratively we can talk through everything. Mm-hmm. It's all about relationships. So there's a huge amount of manual work that goes into it, and then that all gets bundled up and we work with Mediacom, looking at things like Contact Optimizer to then pull that in. And that's been really crucial in terms of, and it's only because we now have enough spend to be able to measure against other channels.
Yeah.
But it means that we can show efficiency, and we are one of the most efficient channels in all of the platform, in all of the channels that we market through.
Is Mediacom the agency of Sky as a whole?
Yeah, so we do our media buying through Mediacom. But all of our influencer work is done directly in-house through my team.
Can we talk about the Sky Glass campaign? From start to finish, in terms of how many pieces of content were posted, how long it took to organise the whole thing, how long it took to get sign off from, you know, stakeholders. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going to take you back.
PTSD. it was amazing. And if I'm honest, I knew that I was setting, and I do this all the time, I'm always thinking, how big can we make something, and then let's stretch ourselves a little bit further than that. So I knew it was going to be a big campaign. For the first time ever, I had a large budget. So I had like £1 million budget to do something. And I knew that we wanted to make a significant splash. So I was involved in initial thinking for Sky Glass about 2 years in advance.
Yeah.
And we started to think about what that campaign was going to look like about 18 months ahead. So we had an ambassador program with about 50 creators that we were working with at the time. And we started to work backwards and to go, OK, how big could we make this? And ideally, where would we get to? So we knew that we wanted to grow the ambassador program to 200. And that was also through the growth of what we were doing within Sky. The fact that we were working on so many entertainment campaigns, so many product campaigns. We were starting to do a lot of clash management, and we didn't want to limit ourselves and in terms of what we could do. So a year out, we onboarded 200 ambassadors. I absolutely loved it because it's always been so crucial to me that we don't just go after people who look like the Sky audience.
Yeah.
So the Sky had come from a very white world background, I guess, and I wanted our ambassador program to be fully representative of everybody in the UK. Mm-hmm. And if I'm really honest, would I have got sign off of some of the ambassadors from some of the exec if I'd put them in a deck and asked for sign off? Possibly not, because I think there would have been a nervousness around, do they represent the brand in the right way?
Yeah.
But I had confidence and had massive pride in the fact that way before everything happened with Black Lives Matters, we were at over 45% diversity in the program. Mm. Every campaign that we do, we were setting KPIs for ourselves around that. And that was really important for me. So we weren't just looking, and it's never been for me about people who talk about TV. It's been people who love music. It's been people who talk about lifestyle, people who travel, people who are into fashion, because everyone loves telly. And so it's critical that what we do is we tap into all of these niches and we get them talking about the stuff that they love in a way that's authentic to them and their communities. So we started getting them working on entertainment campaigns in the lead up to that, knowing that there was going to be this really big campaign. And it was so hard because we couldn't tell them what was coming. Like 6 weeks before it was launching, nobody knew. Everybody was under NDA. they knew that there was something big coming, but I couldn't say what. My mum was asking me what I was working on. Literally couldn't tell her.
Wow. With the 200 ambassadors, how many talent agencies did...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, did that come across? And did you do any ambassadorships that were direct with no talent agent and just you to the creator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say there were probably 20... agencies maybe that we worked with. There are definitely bigger agencies that are more familiar, that we had more talent with. For example, Gleam, we have worked with forever. I love the guys there. We've got a great relationship. Same with Insanity, Diving Bell, like you name it, we work with them. So yeah, we worked with all those, but so many direct relationships, so many, because we work with so many smaller creators as well, and they are a massive important cog in the machine that we're trying to operate here. And so I would say at any one point we were talking to over 100 people at any time. It was massive.
And then 6 weeks out they didn't know. But then the countdown began.
Countdown began. Everyone was very excited. And it was because of the trust that we had with them and the fact that they knew we would work with them on a brief and they had creative freedom and they were never going to be left in a position where they weren't able to do something that felt authentic to them. And because I have creative overview of the campaigns, and for me it was really critical that we were able to land something at launch without them having the product, getting them being able to endorse it in some way, but that creatively there was a red thread throughout. And we'd never really done that before. Sky Glass was the most intrusive campaign that we've ever done in terms of using Sky pixels and branding on influencer content. We had one opportunity to do it, and I would never do it again because we don't want to take over people's channels. Mm-hmm. That's not what we do. We want audiences to get the stuff from the creators that they love. But we had spent so long, it was a one-off. We can use this as a real chance to stand out here and to create a moment. And so it was completely orchestrated. Every single creator went live at 10:30 in the morning at the same time, which I didn't think about because we were in the middle of a keynote by our group CEO Dana in London, and the internet was literally... I remember my number two in the team just going, "Have you looked at Instagram?" And I just remember scrolling and crying and just going, "Oh my God," like I thought we were going to do something, but seeing it come to life in that way was just, it blew me away. Yeah. Mm.
And you talked earlier about people resharing. There was so much of that and just so much conversation about Sky have taken over the internet today. So in terms of the goals that you had for that, it was your biggest campaign. Again, did it hit and over deliver? And what do you know when you were doing a report back to because a senior team, were they pleased?
Yeah.
What does this mean for the future?
I also think, again, I was very lucky. So we had all of the exec over in the room at the event, and so much had been invested in Sky Glass. We think it is the future. We think that TV is outdated and the way that people consume TV. It's absolutely absurd that you spend 25 minutes looking for something on Netflix. You then come out, you then have a look at Amazon, you have a look at Sky, you might have a look at Apple, you look at free-to-air, and then you end up right back where you began, and then your dinner's cold, it's almost time for bed. It's just a bit of a waste of time. Mm. Whereas for us, it was about how do we make people's lives easier? Your time is really vital to you. And actually, through voice, it doesn't matter which platform it's on. You search for something, it will deliver it to you. And you can bookmark it so that wherever it appears in the future, it will be pulled in as part of your playlist. Completely reimagines the way that you consume TV. So all of the exec were in the room, and they were obviously very invested in how it was going down. Social is now a platform where you get immediate feedback. And I hadn't, at no point had I thought, wait there, the exec are going to be looking at this time, and all of these creators are going to be going live at this time. But it was the best thing that we ever could have done, because let's be fair, many of the exec won't be following a lot of the creators that we work with, but they were looking on the hashtag and they could see all of this noise. And then not only all of the noise, but all of the conversation that was then taking place on this content that wasn't our own platform. And so it opened so many eyes, and it's gone from me going around the business going, look, we can do something really great, please someone trust me, to us going, we don't have capacity, we need to build the teams, we can't service everything at once.
So you're in a hiring phase now.
Massively, massively. And that was all due to Skyglass. I mean, I've got the latest stats that we pulled together. And don't get me wrong, we've continued to do a more sustained like review period where it's more in-depth reviews of the product hands-on. But we've had over 3,000 pieces of content. 91 million reach. It's wow. Insane. Nearly 2 million conversations on that content. And I'm looking at people like part-time working mummy, on people like Mrs. Hinge, where at the time they were like, wait there, these are like cleaning accounts, or how is this relevant, Skyglass? And there are whole communities in there going, answering questions, where someone's gone, oh, I'm thinking of getting the white 55 inch. Does anyone know, like, does it work? Like, and how does it work on the credit, like the monthly payments? And then the communities are just jumping in, they're answering. And that's, that education you piece, can't buy that.
I think that is something that influencer does really offer as well. It's things that you can't buy, you know, that you wouldn't get anywhere else. It is just sort of word of mouth on steroids. You do all the influencer marketing in-house, and you wouldn't work with an agency because it is about that trust. Does Sky get approached by, what are your views on influencer marketing agencies, you know, that have cropped up since 2015, 2016?
We get approached all of the time. And what was really quite funny was that after Glass, my inbox was just filled with agencies going, yeah, we saw the Skyglass stuff, so have you considered working with us? And I was like, well, if you saw it, then we're doing our job. But I'm absolutely, look, I had an influencer marketing agency. I'm not against agencies. I think where you don't have the capacity to scale, or where you're just testing something, like, headcount is investment. And so you want to make sure that it's really working for you. And if this is a new space that you're playing in, I have come into this with, my goodness, like nearly 15 years experience in the field. And so I come at it looking at it from a creator still. I never look at it from a brand perspective. So I'm quite privileged in where I sit here. But if I was coming at it as a brand and not really experienced in the influencer space and wanting to know where I play, then I absolutely think that agencies have a role there.
What would you say is a red flag with an agency, like being approached by an agency, a warning sort of a no-no?
I think red flags for me, I've always been slightly nervous of agencies who want to own the IP, and there are agencies out there who, they want to own the IP, they will license it to you as a brand, they will work with creators. I would say getting feedback from creators of working with that brand, if you ever can, if they've demonstrated that they have worked on a big campaign, you know who they worked with. Because for me, that agency represents your brand. And we have done it in the past. I'm not saying Sky have never worked with agencies. I have experience of that. And for me, it works better in-house when we can control that relationship, and I know that creators are being treated the right way and being paid the right amount.
Yeah, it's the transparency around the payments, isn't it, that can be
absolutely because as a brand you can think that you're paying something and then very little of that is going to the creator, and they feel really quite resentful towards brand and you weren't aware of that. And that for me is the main thing, I think.
And then with the talent agencies that are representing the creators, have you ever had, say, just a disparity in fees that's so much that it doesn't make sense? Like, how do you sort of gauge what is on what a payment should be to a creator?
It's definitely been work in progress, for sure. And we continue to have those conversations today. I think because we work with so many talent agents and on such a regular basis, we have quarterly meetings with them where we say, here is our brand ambition. They come to us with their talent and what their talent's ambitions will be. And it might be, so many, for example, want to go into presenting, and it might be that we can help that and unlock some things like that within Sky. So very much working on it together as a relationship and being really transparent. So don't get me wrong, there are times where some of the fees that we're being asked for talent, because they're hot right now, we just can't justify it. And that's because when it goes into something like econometrics and you're measuring it against other channels, you're not going to show yourself as being efficient. And as such, our spend that's designated to us as a business will be reduced. And I can't afford for that to happen. So we have to be smart about it.
I was going to say, not mentioning any names or of the creator or the agency, but in your career, what is the largest single amount of money that's been requested for a piece of content?
We don't tend to get it as much in the UK, but in Italy, because I have a group role in Italy, we've been approached about like £500,000 for a one-off activation with somebody. And to be honest, that's just not of interest to me. Like, I'm not about celebrity endorsement, and I think that there are different types of influencer. For me, it's about somebody who is more of a creator who has a digital following that's really invested in them. So it's not just about brand endorsement. For me, this is somebody that can live and breathe your brand and truly loves it.
And you have these quarterly feedback sessions with the talent agents. Do you, and that there is transparency, so I suppose one agency can sort of figure out how much another's charging, so there is sort of a benchmark that, or a norm. Do you notice that? I know you said that you, even pre-BLM, that you had a 45% diversity, you know, on your work. Do you notice that there's a pay gap? You see people talking about it, that maybe people from different backgrounds are charging less.
So my experience wholeheartedly has been that we pay more to more diverse creators because there are typically fewer of them with a bigger following. And so, but for me, we have to make the decision to do the right thing because our audiences have to be represented, and actually it has to be normalized that when you look at a hashtag, that everybody is represented there and that actually we are giving a foot up and we are using our voice and we are. I remember when Black Lives Matter is just going, what impact can I make here? What difference can I make? And for us, it's about our platform and it's about our budget. So we are lucky at Sky, we have budget. And so it's about being able to fund some of the creators who haven't been given those opportunities before now, because then it will open brands' eyes to say, we need to do more of this. And actually it's expected. It's hygiene. It's not a nice to have. This is what you should be doing.
Yeah. You've talked quite a bit about that you started in events, and in the influencer campaigns that you're doing, there is an event element to it. Mm. You know, it was, everybody was watching as the campaign went live. How important are events, do you think, in terms of influencer marketing and actually tying, you know, having a real life experience that then is complemented with the social?
I think events are incredibly important. I think face-to-face, definitely during lockdown, my God, I missed it so much. Mm. I went from going, not another red carpet, to, oh, I can't wait to be at another event. So I think face-to-face is really important. And we do a big event. We've got it coming up actually in a month called Up Next. And that's our opportunity to showcase all of the amazing content that we've got coming out from Sky this year. It really takes people on the journey to understand what you are, what you stand for as a brand, and to get to understand from creators and to get their spin on things. I think events are incredibly important. I think what the main difference for me now is it's an event and yep. What? Because an event is great for organic coverage, but are you landing the messaging that you need to from that? You can have as many capture content areas as you like, but is that really landing the benefits of what you need it to do? Mm. Realistically, there is nothing that you can do to educate somebody in the way that you can in a brief and a conversation with them, which you can't do in the same way at an event, I think.
Yeah, I think an event with the guarantees across it is just a perfect combination. And we don't actually see that much of that, I think, in terms of what you think we'll see in the future and trends for the influencer space, influencer marketing space. What do you predict that we'll see over the next 18 months?
I think you will see more and more creators being used through the line, which I think is hugely exciting. To me, that's nothing new. It's been happening for a while now. But lots of brands are waking up to it, and we're definitely going to be doing more of that. And I think using creators for their skill set. So for us at events, it's about having paid creators as roving reporters on our social channels, bringing experiences to life. I think you will see more and more partnerships with creators on a deeper level. So what you want is to hear a creator talking about something on their podcast. You'll then notice that they posted something on Instagram, and actually they're then talking about it as part of their vlog. That then becomes the full life cycle that you go, okay, it's in my psyche now, I need to go and check this out. And I think more and more the massive opportunity is Meta, right? Like, I know everyone says buzzword, and I rolled my eyes in the beginning as well. But when I start to look at red carpets, it's really exciting that actually you could have a red carpet in the Metasphere where you have massive talent able to meet all of their fans. And so then it becomes a lot less exclusive and a lot more inclusive. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think I'm just really excited about how brands show up in that space. What will entertainment look like? Will it be that you even sit there and just watch it on your TV? I think in years to come, you'll be submerged in entertainment. It will be fully immersive. And I think that's really exciting. Mm.
And then finally, which creators are you enjoying the content of at the moment? And also, you mentioned right at the beginning that when you're on your way to work, you're listening to a podcast. What podcast are you listening to as well?
So creators that I love, I'm just the biggest fan of Victoria in the Fray, like always have been, always will be. I think she has done such an incredible job of transforming her content from it being just fashion. I think she's now very funny in terms of TikTok. I think that's really, really great. Lorna, again, I consider to be a very close mate as well now. And I think that's a really lovely thing. And that's the privileged position that I'm in. I consider so many of these people to be friends.
Yeah.
I love people like Sam Thompson. I think he's doing some really great and funny work there. When you look at TikTok, someone like your boy Moyo is great. And it was really fascinating. We We took him to the O2 to watch a gig the other week, and compared to Instagram creators, like, people were falling over themselves to get to him. It was.
I heard that about Coachella as well, that it is the year of the TikTok creator.
Really fascinating. So I love all of those guys. And then in terms of podcasts, I'm a massive fan of Secret Leaders.
That's Dan Murray. So,
yes. Yeah. So I've still very much got an entrepreneurial spirit. And I think that's why I thrive at Sky, because I'm not just looking at where does the influencer team grow. I'm looking at how do we influence programming? How do we influence future audiences? That to me is really exciting.
You've been listening to Blogosphere Serious Influence with me, Alice Audley. For more influencer industry updates, be sure to check out www.blogospheremagazine.com.